Intervju Radija Študent.
Pozdravljeni v intervjuju Radija Študent. Danes z nami Brian iz zasedbe Animal Collective, your nickname geologist.
Yes.
So how's been tour so far?
It's been pretty good. We've only been out for a few days. We played a few dates in Poland and Czech Republic and Germany. So yeah, it's been good so far.
It's your first tour in Eastern Europe?
Yeah, we've played in Germany a few times and I think one show in Poland before this, but this is definitely the furthest east we've ever been, and that's kind of why it's a fun tour for us and why we were excited to do it, because, you know, we're playing in cities in front of fans we've never played before. We don't really know what to expect, and they don't know what to expect, so it's been a lot better than I think we would have ever predicted. Like, most of the shows are pretty crowded and people seem pretty excited, so.
Right. So you said you only just started the tour. Will you be back in States in time for elections?
Yes, we will.
So you're going to vote?
Yeah.
So you're here in studio alone. The other guys are probably doing the sound checkup.
Yeah, they're still setting up their stuff.
How come you were appointed to do the interview? Do you usually take turns?
Yeah, we take turns, and I'm usually the fastest to set up. So.
It's better to give interviews than to do sound checkups. Or...
Well, I'm gonna sound check when I get back. But
so success brings many interviews with it, I guess.
It does.
I mean, with getting popular, does this mean the more popular you get, the dumber questions you get asked in the interviews, like this one, maybe?
No, not really. I wouldn't say it's, the questions get dumb. I mean, surprisingly, the more popular you get, and the more interviews you do, you seem to get the same questions that you got even before, you know.
Mm-hmm. So. What are maybe the ups and downs of getting popular? Probably you get to do what you like to do, so that's a big up, but maybe downside, is it the media?
I wouldn't say the media is a downside. It's just, you know, we all are in pretty serious relationships. Dave and Noah are married. I'm getting married next year. Noah has a child, and we really like, you know, being home and being with the people that we love. And the more popular you get, you know, there's just more demand for you to play shows and to do a lot more kind of media requests and press. And since we all live in different places, that that usually means we have to travel somewhere. You know, if we're going to do European press, that's like a week or two of, you know, being away from our families and stuff. So it's not the media by itself, you know, it's just kind of the travel and the time commitments that are associated with it.
Mm-hmm. So usually when bands get big, they start to think differently. I mean, in a way, they must start thinking differently because they support other people as well. It's not just about the band anymore, but a bigger group, let's say, tour people and managers and so. Do you think it's possible to support all these people without compromising your music?
Yeah,
because
I think
to
so.
To a certain extent,
we're not like the Grateful Dead, you know. It's not like we have a crew of 100 people that you know that we keep on staff all year long. We work mostly with, you know, our crew is one or two people, you know, or two or three people for every tour that we do, and they're always friends of ours, and they have other jobs besides coming on tour with us. You know, they come on tour with us because, you know, they really enjoy, you know, being associated with our music, and, you know, since we're all really good friends, we just enjoy traveling together and having a good time, but they don't rely on Animal Collective to eat, you know. I mean, the only
not
person
yet. Maybe you will get there,
maybe. And maybe they won't choose to come with us at that point, but the only person that really eats off the band, I think, is Noah's kid, but she's small, she doesn't eat that much yet, so
Right. So I read somewhere in the beginning, so you would often empty the clubs where you played, and nowadays you play in front of thousands.
Mm-hmm.
So what changed? Do people mindsets change, or did your music become more approachable?
I think it's a little bit of both. I mean, when we were playing, you know, when we would clear clubs, we weren't a very well-known band, so the people that came to see us weren't necessarily the kind of people that would be open to, you know, more kind of experimental pop music like we play.
Mm-hmm.
We, you know, back in those days, we were often, like, touring with bands who were also misrepresented. Like, our first tour we did with Black Dice, they were often considered a hardcore band, so they would be booked by these kind of mm-hmm. punk promoters, and they weren't, there was nothing hardcore about them, and certainly isn't anything hardcore about us. And mm-hmm. So we were often playing to audiences that just came to a show not knowing anything about the bands, and I think we weren't what they were expecting. And now, you know, the people that come to our shows, I think, are a bit more familiar with our records, and they know a little bit more what to expect, so they're open to it. And I also think, I mean, you can't deny, if you listen to our older records and listen to our records now, there's always been, like, a pop structure and pop songs underneath.
Especially,
you know,
maybe after Song Tongs.
Yeah, well, Song Tongs is definitely, like, a turning point, you know, when, mm-hmm. You know, it seemed like the pop structure and the vocals kind of were brought a little more to the forefront than in the past. But, I mean, the structure of the songs, there's always been, like, a pop element to it. It's just sort of what we cover it with, you mm-hmm. know, like, I think at the time, we were, you know, in the early days, I think we were more kind of infatuated with, like, the noises and the frequency, like, the harsh frequencies and things, you know, because mm-hmm. our lives were sort of like that, you know, they're a bit more noisy and harsh, like, just like our day-to-day lives, so mm-hmm. that's sort of what we expressed in our music. And, you know, Song Tongs was kind of a point where we all became much happier as people and our lives became more relaxed, and since then I feel like that's been reflected in our music.
Mm-hmm. Because this approach to more conventional songwriting, what's your opinion on this? I mean, you obviously don't mind pop structure, and but you still experiment within this pop structure. So do you just approach music? I mean, do you think about structure and this stuff when you go recording, or you just record what you feel at that time?
No, we often, the songs are usually written and we know them pretty well by the time we get into recording, but because we play them live a lot before we record. And we definitely think about the structure of the songs, you know, and we enjoy pop music, and a lot of what we do we consider to sort of be structurally like pop music. So, yeah, I mean, it's definitely mm-hmm. well thought out. There's a lot of freedom in certain parts of our songs to improvise and get more experimental.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just, you know, we like all different kinds of music, and everyone in the band likes different kinds of music from one another, so...
Mm-hmm. I remember reading that you at some point tried to make techno music with acoustic guitars. So where did this idea came from?
I mean, we all love this is just, techno music, and we sort of like...
What is it about techno music that you like?
That's a hard question to answer, you know, it's just something you feel, you know.
Is it the repetitiveness, maybe?
Yeah, we like the repetitiveness because we all sort of like trancey sort of things in music, you know, we like to trance out to stuff, so there's that aspect of it. We really like the sort of extreme frequencies that are often used in techno, like the really subby
mm-hmm.
bass stuff, and also like the sort of really precise, like high frequencies in it. It's just like very sort of like visceral music in a lot of ways, and... In terms of, you know, making it with acoustic guitars or acoustic instruments, I don't know, we just sort of, you know, with vocals or acoustic stuff, you know, like back in 2000, Dave and Noah and I would often kind of just improvise a lot in our apartment, and mm-hmm. we would record these things, and we sort of
which
got
then
into the
get
fact.
Lost.
Yeah, which then got stolen.
Not stolen, lost. Right.
And we just, you know, realized that even with vocals or acoustic instruments, you can make these very electronic sounding noises, you know, when you sort of didn't approach the instruments or the vocals in very traditional ways, and we just had a lot of fun working with that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So musicians usually don't want to be connected to their influences too much. I don't know, like they're scared of it or something, but you're quite openly about it. I mean, you talk about this certain music that even reflect in your own music. So how much do you want these inspirations or influences to be heard in your music?
How much do I want them to be heard in our music?
Yeah.
And we don't really want to sound like our influences, you know, because, and it's not that, you know, we just don't like people associating us or comparing us with something else. It's just because we really like new music and this sort of adventurous spirit in music. And at least for me and someone like, you know, Dave, who's Aviterra, you know, like listening to a lot of psychedelic music and experimental music growing up, you know, it wasn't, and we were, you know, really influenced by it, but it wasn't so much like we wanted to sound like that, because that sort of is contrary to the spirit of what a lot of that music was at the time. You know, like psychedelic music was completely not about being retro, you know, like in terms of your aesthetic at the time. It was like a really forward thinking and like mind expanding approach to music. And
do you think it's a retro thing now?
I think, I mean, yeah, but I mean, it's fine, but like a band that wants to just sound like a 60s band, you know, like in that kind of production and the songwriting style and the sounds that they use, that's fine if that's what they're into, and there are people that do it really well. But for us, it's just not what the inspiration that we take from that music. So, you know, to be doing something retro that would just sound exactly like Pink Floyd or something like that, you know, to us, it's just like, it's, there's nothing interesting about that for us personally, you know, but I'm not, you know, nothing against people that enjoy doing that, you know. I mean, I have a friend who plays in a band who gets compared to a lot of his influences, and he often says, like, I don't care, like, I'm not trying to be original, I'm just trying to have fun, and what's fun for me is playing music that sounds like the bands that I like, and I totally respect that, you know. It just doesn't work for us, you know.
To me, it's, I mean, a pretty important thing to be able to connect new music to older music, music I know from before, not direct influences, but you can hear a certain stuff inside of it. So do you prefer this sort of music or something completely new? Something you can relate to older music, for example?
I don't know if I have a strong feeling about that either way. I mean, it's great when you hear something that sounds completely new and not like anything else, but at the same, you know, I don't like music just because it's new. There still has to be something in it that, like, I respond to emotionally or, you know, aesthetically, and whether that includes aspects of old music or doesn't, you know, it's not, that doesn't factor too heavily into it.
So, what sort of music or bands do you listen to nowadays? Did you hear any great new stuff?
We've all really been into this girl from Portland, Oregon. Her name's Liz Harris. She plays under the name Grouper. And she has this new record out called Dragging a Dead Deer Up a Hill, which I really like.
What sort of music is it?
It's really kind of pretty, kind of drony, ambient sort of stuff. But there is, like, kind of song structure in it. And, like, it's really ethereal, really hazy. But she writes really pretty songs. And
how did you find her?
How do you find
new music in general?
You know, you look on the internet, or you know, I still read. I kind of, you know, growing up, we didn't have the internet so much, you know, finding new music. But you know, I subscribe to record distributors like Update Lists or record stores that I like. You know, I subscribe to their mailing lists, and but I mean, in a position like us, where we know so many people that are involved in music, you know, that are, you know, journalists or people that work at record stores. At this point, we often just get recommendations from our friends. I think that's how we found Grouper. I think somebody that we knew was like, you should check out this record. It's really good.
I recall this Grouper name, but I'm not sure about the album, but I'll check. Thanks.
Yeah.
So how did you come across Axolotl, who are opening for your...
We've known him for a really long time, actually.
Oh, it's just one guy?
Yeah, it's just one guy. Now it is. Mm-hmm. It used to be a few people, but now it's just... It's always been centered around this guy, Carl Bauer. And we met him in New York in, like, 1998 or 1999. Like, Dave went... and him went to the same school. We had a lot of friends, like, mutual friends. He and I met... We're actually trying to remember this today, how we met. We ended up standing next to each other, like, at a club, some show. We can't remember which one or how we were there. But, yeah, so we've known him for a long time. And he moved to the West Coast. Him and Dave used to live in the same building. We used to see him a lot. And, you know, we were really good friends. But then he moved to San Francisco for many years. And since then, we've only gotten to see him when we're on tour or he's on tour. And we enjoy his music a lot, and, you know, it turned out we were both going to be over here. And he moved back to New York recently, but then went right back on tour, so it was just a really good chance for us, since we were going to be in the same part of the world at the same time, to get to watch each other play every night and also sort of reconnect as friends and spend a lot of time together. So.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You mentioned Black Dice earlier, and you shared the practice space with them and Gang Gang Dance.
Yeah, for a couple of years, yeah. Early
2000s. Are you still in touch with those two bands?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, they're both,
because
you know, some
did
of
you
our...
Did you hear maybe the new Gang Gang Dance album?
I haven't heard it yet. It's in our van, actually, but I haven't listened to it yet. I've heard them play the material live and stuff, but I haven't listened to the record. So, but yeah, they're all really, both those bands, we're all still really close friends. We still see each other all the time.
It's interesting that all three are pretty, you all three got pretty big now and you play intriguing music. So it's, how did you meet in the beginning?
Was there just from being around New York. Again, Dave went to college with one of the people and one of the Eric from Black Dice, and but I'm not sure if they met through school. I think we had a friend who was going to put out a Black Dice record, and he knew that Dave and I and Josh and Noah, that we all kind of recorded our own music in Baltimore. So Black Dice came down to Baltimore, and Dave recorded them, you know, doing a couple of songs at his house and at his parents' house.
Was there this New York noise scene at that time?
No, this was kind of this was before that. This was, you know, this was right about that time, like the, you know, late 90s, and it was that Cold Hands 12-inch that Black Dice put out. That was the record that that Dave recorded, and he got along with him really well, and then he and I were driving around the country on the West Coast, and they were on tour, and they asked if we just wanted to play a show, just the two of us, like opening for them, and so we went up to like Olympia, Washington, and yeah, we just became really good friends really fast. And Gang and Dance, they used to be a band called Death and Dying when they first moved to New York. Some of the guys, when they lived in Washington, D.C., we were fans of a band they were in called Cranium, and then they moved to New York, and they were in this band, Death and Dying, and we just ended up playing at a club one night. Both our bands were on the bill, and then that happened a few more times, and they became Gang Gang Dance. So we sort of met them through promoters at bars, just kind of sticking us on the same concert bill. And
So was there something special about this place you practiced in, or was it just about the people?
It was just about the people, I think. I mean, we never really practiced there together. None of the bands didn't get together to play with each other, improvise that much. A couple times it happened, but there was like a little schedule on the door, like a piece of paper you wrote down when you were going to be in there. And it was a really awful practice space. It was really small, and we all had tons of too much stuff in there, and a lot of it was broken. There was trash and cigarette butts and things all over the floor, and empty beer bottles everywhere. And you could hear the bands from either on both sides, like. But
obviously it was a great inspiration in some way.
Yeah, well, I mean, just, I don't know about at the practice space, because, it was really ugly and disgusting. But, like, just, everybody playing shows and things and, like, just getting together and hanging out, like, at bars and stuff or at people's apartments and talking about music and playing each other what we were working on or going to see each other live. Like, that's sort of where, like, the inspiration between our three bands and, other people that were kind of part of that. Community back then, that's sort of where it came from. The practice space thing maybe is more of a coincidence.
Right. So we're going to make a short break. We'll just hear a song called Cobweb.
Cobweb,
and we'll be back.
Blotted for time, all stock told me. Run while the earth holds this heat.
We are running a bit short of time, so we'll just move to your live performing.
Okay.
I think in the beginning of October, your new album was announced for January.
Mm-hmm.
So I know when you record stuff, I mean, you don't play stuff that is on albums on your live shows. So does this mean we'll hear completely new stuff that is not going to be on this new album?
No, we're going to play
stuff from this album.
Stuff from this album, yeah. That's coming out in January, and we still play some old songs now. You know, we don't retire things like we used to. I mean, you know, being the headliner and playing for 90 minutes or 2 hours like we do, we don't have enough new songs that we could play. And you know, we've also sort of just discovered that we enjoy playing the older stuff, and we kind of rework it, a lot of the old songs, so that they sound more similar to the style of the new songs, so the set feels like kind of one cohesive thing. So, and you know, we have been writing a lot of new music for like our next project, but that project's a visual album. It's going to be like released on DVD and played in movie theaters. It's not ever going to
be... What sort of images? Is it an abstract thing?
It's pretty abstract. I mean, there's some like little stories and things like that, but there's not much like linear and plot-wise, or not much dialogue and stuff. But we don't want it to ever be separated from the visual part of it, you know. So we're probably never going to play those songs live. So for now, even though, you know, we have started working on the next musical project, the live set will remain the same and include the Meriwether Post Pavilion songs, which is the record coming out in January.
But in the past, your live setup changed quite a bit. I mean, from album to album, basically. So I think it may be confusing to some people. They come and expect, I don't know, acoustic folk music, and they hear techno music. Do you think that people in general think too much about music instead of just letting go? Or,
I mean, I can only speak from our experience and our shows. That was a big problem after Song Tongs, but it wasn't as bad as, you know, you'd think it would be. There was always someone that came up and was like, "I came here to see you play these songs off of Song Tongs. You didn't play any, or you only played one, and it didn't sound like the record." But people respond, and you know, at that point we started playing the field songs, and people actually still were really open-minded about it. And at this point, you know, just like you're asking me this question, like in most of the press we do for the shows, like we have the opportunity to tell people that it's going to be that way, and people seem to know what they're getting into when they come. So they come with more of an open mind.
Yeah. Right. So it seems that now your roles on stage are much more determined than they used to be, than what they used to be. Is this mainly because of the nature of these new songs, or do you feel more comfortable if you have your role inside the band set more strictly?
Well, I mean, our roles have always, you know, we never switched up that much. You know, the person that switched the most drastically was Noah, who used to just play drums, and then, but in the studio, we would always ask him to sing and stuff because he's really talented at everything. And he started writing more songs, and you know, now he does drumming and also plays samplers, and even for Song Tongs he was playing guitar and stuff. You know, Dave's always kind of been more like the primary singer, like lead singer, and plays like either keyboards or samples or guitar, and I've always just done the electronics. Josh has always just done guitar, so our roles haven't really changed that much. I think maybe the specific equipment has. But, you know, except for Noah, who I feel like his role is much different now than it used to be.
Tim DeWitt from Gang Gang Dance once said that it takes quite a while to get used to playing at these bigger stages. So do you prefer these bigger stages, or do you like small clubs?
I like both of them. You know, they both have good things and bad things. And we've played at festivals in front of a lot of people. And, you know, you don't feel like this intimate energy with the people, but like the hugeness of it and like the epicness of it can still be really fun. And you know, and just like having the opportunity to translate stuff to, or transmit, you know, your songs to that many people at once can be a thrill in itself. And you know, and playing the small stages is just, you know, it's like transmitting on a much closer, intimate level. So mm-hmm. that's a positive. And you know.
So maybe how much does the feedback from the crowd affect your set?
It affects our, you know, we don't even look up at the crowd that much, you know, because it can be distracting. But when the crowd's going crazy and giving us a lot of energy, like, you can't help but sort of respond to it and give them some more back, you know. It definitely, it affects it, but I don't think it's necessary for the crowd to go crazy for us to do a good set, you know. Mm-hmm. But
So tonight you just expect good energy from the crowd.
I hope, yeah. I hope they enjoy it.
Would you like to add anything at the end, maybe?
No, I mean, we're just really psyched to be here. None of us have ever been to Ljubljana or Slovenia before, and, you know, we're really excited that you guys asked us to come.
Excellent. So, thank you for talking to us.
Thank you.
To je bil torej intervju Radija Študent. Animal Collective lahko slišite danes večer v Menzi pri Koritu. Mislim, da oni pridejo okrog 10:30. Pred njimi Axolotl, okrog 10:00. Mislim, da ob 9:00 se odprejo pa vrata in začne vrteti glasbo Antoko. Moje ime je bilo Goran. Lep pozdrav.
Intervju Radija Študent.